Gosh, John, I forget how good you are at karate. That's incredible.
I know, man. I mean, it's all about the right belt.
It is. Timing, you know? Or your leather belt.
Exactly.
I feel like maybe, is that not, that's what you meant?
Not really, okay. But speaking of, Dave, wow, I'm just going to try to transition to save you. Finally, Dave.
Yeah.
Warm spring days are arriving.
Oh,
am I right?
Isn't it great? You know what? I need a new pair of shades that I don't have to baby. Do you know what I'm saying, John? I don't want to take care of them. Let me put them on, take them off, and not have to worry about
them. Hey, Dave, I know exactly
what you mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant.
Knock around is the solution. They've been making high-quality shades that don't break the bank since 2005.
Oh, wow.
And they've actually been my personal go-tos for years.
Oh, yeah. I love Knock Around, John. They have over 20 different frame styles, so there's something for everyone, including tons of kids' pairs.
That's right. So whether you're looking to rep your favorite sports teams, you know, like you're a sports guy, spend some relaxation time in the yard, or cruise down Broadway with the windows down like Dave does all the time.
All the time.
Every Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday. Knock Around, that's what you need.
Yeah. All of their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyes, which, by the way, I've tried that and it hurts. Use the sunglasses, everybody. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
Dave, that is such a good price that I might buy a pair just to intentionally lose them.
I don't love that logic, John, but
I know,
you do have a history of misplacement. It's Knock Around.
Don't fight me because of the karate stuff.
But it could be perfect for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, Dadville fans, don't squint through family beach days or trips to the park. Check out knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com. Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with
Dave and me.
John. You were just going to wait.
Just getting in the zone. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dadville. This is a special Dadville. What's special for me?
I feel like they're all, aren't they all special, though?
Yes. They all are different. This is different.
Okay, sure.
And it's people can already tell that it's different because they're like, why is John talking so much?
Why does he keep yapping?
This is me doing the intro because, you know, this is an episode of Dadville where I have accumulated a couple just random thoughts over the last, you know, month, 2 months or so. And I texted Dave the other day and I was like, hey, let's do a Dadville where we just talk about some of these random thoughts, you know?
I love that.
Yeah. And so that. Dave doesn't know what we're going to talk about. There we go.
Yeah.
Speaking of texts.
Listen, sorry, guys. This thing is just gone. I've just been popping off all morning. I'm so sorry. Just one of those mornings.
This is just a regular day.
Just a regular day.
This is just a regular President's Day for Dave. Happy President's Day.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And an Abe Lincoln to you.
Yeah. So, first off, I would like to just get a little checkup with you.
Checkup from the neck up?
How you doing?
Is that
checkup from the neck up.
Okay. How are we doing, John? Do I go first? Should we go first?
If you're ready to go first.
I'm ready.
Go first.
I'm always ready. You know me. I'm always ready. I'm good, you know. I tell you, you know what was really exciting last night at 4 a.m.?
Nothing.
Well, no. I do have something.
What is it?
I am sitting, well, I should say lying asleep, and I hear a beep.
Uh-huh.
Beep. And that kind of, what was that? And I know.
Not a familiar, not, an unfamiliar beep.
Quasi-familiar, because I know this is probably a smoke alarm chirping.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't live in a palatial estate by any means, but we probably have 7 smoke alarms.
Well.
So.
You just contradicted yourself.
Well,
go ahead.
Listen, 15,000 square
feet. You are either in a palatial estate or you are super paranoid.
or they're all collected in one spot. We're really concerned about the front room.
Yeah.
If that thing catches it, we're toast. We've got some good paintings in there. But I know immediately this is probably a smoke alarm chirping. And of course it's chirping at 4 a.m. and not p.m.
Yeah. So there should be a setting on there that they can't.
Oh my gosh.
Like if they're going to go off by all means at 4 a.m. But don't start the chirp at 4 a.m.
Well, you know, one of the worst nights of my life is when it comes to sleeping was about 2 years ago. So nowadays, you know, because our house is whatever, 10 years old, like in the newer builds, quote unquote, you have to not just have the smoke alarms that everybody knows where you open a little thing, you stick a battery in, you close them, you test them. Right. You have to have hardwired smoke alarms. So one of the worst nights of my life, the hardwired smoke alarms go off. And the only way you can turn off hardwired smoke alarms is by the breakers. So you can't, they just go. Yeah. So here's some fun facts. So I woke up to, and these don't beep. They go off. So we had, so about whatever that was, 2 years ago, something.
House is on fire.
Dead asleep. And bam, wham, 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 wham. And I mean, now by the grace of God, nobody wakes up but me, which is, I don't want to know how that happens, like what spiritual protection we had that night. So I am 180 BPM heart rate.
Right.
Just terrified, and I sit, and they're done. I'm like, what the heck was that? So I walk out in the hall. 3 minutes later, bam, wham, 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 wham. And I'm like, so I call the alarm system. They have like an emergency, like, you know, it's 2:30 a.m. Hey, our alarm. Oh, well, all right, now let me see here what's going. Oh yeah, that's not because the alarm, the smoke, all of it's tied to different alarm companies. So he's like, well, that's not us, but I bet you. So he's, and I think he didn't know what to tell me. So I'm like, it's just, imagine the anxiety. It is going off intermittently for about 5 seconds every 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
Yeah. Just long enough for you to know that it's going off.
Have minor cardiac arrest. Yes. Yeah. Every single time. So finally, by the grace of God, I think the guy tells me, go downstairs and just turn your breakers off. He's like, I don't know what to tell you, but that's definitely going to do it. Turn those off. Finally, I don't think I slept the rest of the night.
You haven't turned them back on since.
Yeah, no, they've been off. So if it goes down, it's just going down. But here's the fun fact for those, for anybody who's listening. All you have to do, and this is exactly what it was. I finally looked online. You get your pressurized air, and you go to all those things, and you blow them out. And what happens is it sees dust and collects dust in the little because they've got an open thing. They kind of hang up, you know, off the top of your ceiling.
Right.
And you can see through them. It's just a little area. So if smoke gets in that thing, the little laser, whatever it is, sees it and goes off. Well, dust will collect in that opening, and it thinks it's smoke. And so sure enough, the next morning when I finally figured out what to do, I started blowing them out, and, like, dust is coming out. And I was like, okay, so, one, you have to blow those things out of here. Well, last night, that's what I'm thinking, too. I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's starting to happen again. So I realized it's not that. I finally, over about 30 minutes, because it would go off every 10 minutes, I would move to a different section of the house. So I'd sit there on the top of the stairs waiting. It was like, okay, I think it's in Sam's room. So I'd stand in Sam's room 10 minutes, trace it downstairs. I'd change the smoke alarm batteries. Just pull them out, put on those in. Well, as I'm about to go upstairs, it beeps again. So this is about 30 or 40 minutes in because it would only 10 minutes. Every 10 minutes is when it would beep.
Yeah.
I finally realized I bought this. I think y'all have one too. Those CO alarms, the carbon dioxide.
Oh, yeah.
That you just plug in.
Right.
We're painting our front room.
Oh, yes.
I pulled it out of the wall.
I saw that yesterday.
And it was sitting on the floor. And because, you know, when you're that sleepy, you're trying to find, you know, by sonar.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm like, it doesn't sound impossible. Like it's high. And I just forget, like, oh, this thing. So I finally pick it up and it beeps. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Because we had pulled it out because we were painting the room. So I pulled the battery out and then I finally went back upstairs and tried to go
back
to
sleep. And you could go back to sleep?
Oh, no. No, it took a good... I ended up just reading on my Kindle for like 30 minutes because my heart was like, let's do this, you know? So it was just cranking whatever that is, testosterone or to my brain.
That reminds me of a time when, this was years ago, when we had just got an alarm system for our house. And Amy and I had made a fire that night. You know, we're hanging out, we go to bed.
I'm curious about whatever, but keep going.
Yeah, well, let's just keep it. There might be children listening. So we go to bed, and like we hadn't been asleep very long at all, but I fell hard asleep. And we wake up, I wake up to like Amy's waking me up. She's on the phone with someone. There's a beeping. I mean, I am so out of it. I'm like as they say, like when you wake up, there's like a period of time when you are clinically insane.
Yeah.
I'm hard in that zone.
Yeah.
And Amy hands me the phone, and it's like our alarm company. And
oh
I'm
my
just,
gosh!
I'm walking around the house, and this woman is like, "Sir, we have a signal from your address, and is everything okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no, everything's fine." And Amy's like, "We don't know that everything's okay." And I'm like,
"Don't tell
oh me yeah, yes. I might not be. I don't know.
Who's the guy with the knife in the kitchen? It's probably Dave.
I don't know. We're new to the neighborhood.
He's making bread.
Does he have a key? I feel like it's just as much his house as ours." But what happened is the fire had like kicked back up and set off our like motion sensor.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What kind of fire is it? Is it a mobile fire?
It's a mobile fire. Yeah. It's like a Roomba fire. It just slowly heats the corners of the house.
That's our $1 billion idea that immediately gets shot down by the sharks. We take that to the Shark Tank and they're like, that's not happening.
I would totally take that to Shark Tank just to see somebody. Cuban's in a mood. He might bite on that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The other thing I was going to tell you, John, I want to give a little plug. The other thing that I just did, which was really awesome, is I went and sat with this guy, Pete Richardson, to do a life plan. They're not sponsoring this. I want to be really clear on this. They're not sponsoring this podcast. Yeah. Patterson Center, yeah, which is where he runs. This is a free shout out.
Is this the first time you've ever done this?
This is the first time I've ever done it. And so this is why I'm bringing this up, because I think there may be some people listening to this like, this sounds like something I might want to do. Yeah. So basically, I have a lot of friends that have done this, and it's Pete and his team. So it's called the Patterson Center. It's really cool. Check it out. You can get online. His name's Pete Richardson. You can find all the stuff out about him. Really cool, bald guy. They do this for companies. A lot of their time, they'll go into a corporation and help create culture, sort of vision and clarity. But he does it with couples. He does it with individuals. He does a lot with
That's
like
cool.
business
I didn't
know
he guys. Did it with couples.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But a lot of his clients are like dudes kind of near my age that are sort of going, okay, I'd love to sort of know how to approach the next like 20 years. Like yeah. what? But it's cool because it's not limited to business. In fact, it's the five spheres are physical, personal. Hello. Personal, family, community, church, vocation. Yeah. And so you go through and basically what his deal and what they do is they just clarify sort of kind of your life mission statement and then how to understand that. They take your past. It takes 2 days. It's about 24 hours, 2 days of kind of 12-hour,
yeah.
a little less than that sessions. And they have this methodology they take you through and it kind of helps you clarify your vision. What is it you're passionate about? And then they help you sort of understand how to make decisions according to that mission statement. So mm-hmm. as opposed to just willy-nilly living your life, doing all these crazy things, thinking, why does this feel good? Why does that not?
Yeah.
But it was really great. And so anybody that's listening that's mildly interested in some of that, or, big reason I went is I just thought, kind of feel like I'm 20 years in now doing this music thing, which I want to keep doing. But was just like, I don't know, am I thinking about this right? Are there other opportunities I should be thinking about in tandem with music yeah. or even inside of music? But it's so much more comprehensive. It's great about your kids, your family, your wife, your spouse, church, community. It's really cool. But I just got back from that, so I'm feeling...
Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it was, in a yeah. great way. Yep, yeah, exactly. And a lot more. But I had talked to a couple friends. The joke with Pete, that the four or five friends that I've had go, and this will be my warning to you, they all went, quit their jobs, and started businesses.
They all did?
They all did.
No way.
Literally all of them. I think of the five I knew that went, or the four out of the five that I knew
this
that went.
This is where our Roomba fire thing
Well, why do you
in.
Think I brought it up?
Yeah.
Because mobile fire. two words you don't hear a lot. Mark Cuban, I see
Who
you checking
says
out.
Fire needs to be contained?
Mark, I want you to stay with me now. Okay. And sure, you're going to want to talk insurance. You're going to want to talk, but is it near anything wooden? Okay. That doesn't matter.
Stay
right
focused.
Now. But it was really great. So that I'm going to really like clear. I'm vision.
Yeah.
Which I'm always, I don't know about you, like I always get, when people start talking to me, like my wife and I went to Colorado this January to sit down and, or whatever, went to the beach for a day or two to like get our vision. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, what is that? Like plans, I'm always nervous about people making plans. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like really grandiose plans.
I am too, but what is that about you that makes you that way?
Well, one, I think me personally, it's always felt like a lot of pressure. It's like, oh, God, yeah, yeah. we got it. But two, I'm like, it feels a little, which is weird because Pete helped me work through this, but it feels a little almost anti-biblical because of the whole, like, we make the plans and then God,
right,
whatever.
Right.
But, wow, is that a wonderful misquoting of that Bible verse. But I don't know. It's just always felt a little like, well, you can't really control things. So why are we making plans and we're just eventually going to be like
right
frustrated because it didn't go like you wanted to or whatever. But I think he was really helpful in making it me understand. Like that's, he even has a chart that's like, what can we control that we're planning?
Yeah.
Like literally, yeah. Like, is this controllable? Is it mildly controllable? Is it not controllable? And so it was very different from that, but it was really great and very like, so anybody listening, that's like, man, I just feel like I could use a little, be it your marriage, be it whatever, you know, your life, your vocation, sort of feeling stuck or like that, that he said, that's the word people use the most when they see him
stuck.
It's like, I just kind of feel stuck at my job or personally, or just kind of spiritually or whatever. And he's really, his skill set, he's done it for 30 years now. It's all he's done. It's crazy.
Wow.
But he just kind of sits with you and has these very specific methodologies. It's not like you're sitting out there, you know, smoking peyote, like trying to find your answer in the wind, you know.
It's interesting. Like, does he do it? Has he done it?
Yes. He was mentored by a guy named Tom Patterson, which is the Patterson Center. And Tom is this kind of larger than life guy. But later in his life, he realized that was kind of what he wanted to do, was sort of help people. So it's a very specific, like, it's all based on this Eastern thinking and in the way that they sort of approach problem solving. And so it's cool.
Isn't it interesting, the midlife crisis thing?
Ugh.
And how much of a thing it is?
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know that we've talked about this on here, but I know for me, one of the things that's really weird, I mean, I don't want to, this could turn into a TED talk, but I do think that's weird about what we do specifically, like music and especially artistry.
Yeah.
Is, I think it's so much like sports, you know, like, you know, like being a wide receiver for an NFL team, that like, that's a very succinct thing you do. Nobody goes into that. I mean, this analogy breaks down for a minute, but I'll build it back up. But like, you know, you kind of know, like, I'm going to do this 10, 15 years and then I just can't, like, my body's not going to do it anymore. So, and I think sometimes our job is a little like that. It's like when you're actually really productive and creative, it's going to be for a certain amount of time. And then a lot of guys and girls and bands, you know, then they put out music every now and then, but it's more about just touring at that point. Like, you're just if you can have enough hits or whatever, you know, you just kind of tour ad nauseum. It's not really set up for people to continually create, you know, it's set up for people to continually perform, which is where the sports breaks down. But I think there is such thing as sort of like atrophy in those things. You know, it's like the longer you do it. I mean, you and I talk about this a lot off the pod, OTP. But, you know, it's just hard to keep creating. It's like, you know, I mean, songs can you write about love or whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I think,
well, and it's like, you're listening to your own voice for 20 years.
Yeah.
And your like tolerance for it comes and goes.
Yeah.
And evolves. And,
well, maybe even to our fans. So I think, you know, I think that's some of why I have, you know, I've been sort of walking through a little bit of a season. Like, I love to do this. Can I keep doing it? What does it look like to keep doing it? Are there other things I should be thinking about with that or inside of that or whatever?
Right.
And so that was sort of the impetus for going, but it was really great.
I think it's cool you went. Yes. It makes me want to go.
Yeah.
It makes me think, like, that's something I want to do. I mean, I, same as you, I've always kind of been like anti like goals
and
plans.
Yeah, me too.
But my thing has been like, that feels like the opposite of like creativity.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm more like, nah, let's like write the song at 2 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm like, that's ridiculous.
let's fix this smoke alarm at 2 a.m.
We got the smoke alarm thing at 2 a.m.
2 a.m. is already booked.
It's booked. Everything's booked. Now I'm like, okay, I see. Yeah. I see the necessity and the value and like having some goals and some plans.
Well, too, and I don't know if you feel this way, but this is kind of where I was going a second ago before I got derailed. But like, there's just no well-worn path for you and I. Like, there wasn't 30 years ago.
Well, there's a well-worn path that we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, touche. Yeah. Touche, yeah. Yeah, it goes the wrong way. That's a great point. Toward the end of a career. But I think there's just not, that's one of the first things he and I talked about. It's like, I just don't, there's no marching orders. There's no like, well, this is what you do when you get out of this or do this or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I was just like, I would just like to know a little bit of like, with someone that's wiser than me, that when they hear me talk and ask these questions, what is their input? You know, they go, oh, it sounds like this or whatever. Because it's just, you know, you can sit with, I mean, you and I have a million friends that are older than us that do it.
Uh-huh.
But their story is not going to, it's going to apply a lot to you and I, but then it's not at all going to apply to you and I.
Right.
So it's really hard to kind of feel like,
really discern what's useful and what's not.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Man.
Dave.
Jeez Louise. Yeah.
I want to give a shout out. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house. Yeah. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have like a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So, you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
You know, in my humble opinion, headphones are one thing that should be personalized and comfortable, especially when they're being worn for long periods of time. You know, earbuds can cause so much discomfort, but the Ultimate Ears Fits True Wireless Custom Fit Earbuds from Ultimate Ears are here to change all that. Listen, I have loved the comfort and quality of my Fits earbuds while also holding a charge for over 20 hours. That's insane. You get a guaranteed perfect fit in 60 seconds. You put them in your ears, they heat up, they do this crazy magic thing. It's insane. Ultimate Ears Fits will stay put when you're on the go, but feel extra comfortable so you can wear them all day long without pain, without discomfort. And listen, if you try your fits and you don't love them as much as I do, no worries. Ultimate Ears offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, plus you'll get free shipping, free returns, and a one-year warranty. Use promo code DADVILLE at ue.com/fits to get your pair of UE fits. That's ue.com/fits, promo code DADVILLE. It's interesting. I'm sure there's like a great book out there on, probably tons of books, but on midlife crises.
Well, the
and
ones
like, is when did that start happening?
Yeah,
like 500 years ago, were people having midlife crises?
Well, I tell
when
you what,
18, because that was midlife.
Yeah,
for them?
They're 9 years old. They're like, man, I can't.
What's
do
it
this
all
anymore.
About? God, if I have to do one more day of shucking corn and putting hay out for the cattle, yeah, I've done this for 5 years. I got to do this another. Got to do another five.
My entire adult life.
All my kids.
And then they could hear your story about the smoke alarm and be like, oh, I think I've got it pretty good. I don't want to put up with that.
I don't want to live to 43 to have to deal with smoke alarms.
I do think there is something to, you know, I think it's a little bit of the Song of Solomon thing. Like, I feel a lot of that energy when I've been going through this of kind of like, what is life about? Is it meaningless kind of thing? Uh-huh. But, you know, there is all these books because there's Halftime, which is a great one about this. Falling Upward by Richard Rohr. I mean, there's a lot of books about this. I mean, even David Brooks' The Second Mountain. Like, there's a lot of books that are about this thing. So the thing that's comforting to me is this is a tale as old as time. That
totally.
And you know,
which is comforting and discomforting all at the same time.
Oh yeah, I mean, Rohr makes his point. I mean, his is based on somebody else. I can't remember. David Brooks, the same thing. It's this idea that like, you know, everybody kind of gets to that point. Now, some people get to it when they're 60. Some people get to it when they're 25. But this realization that Solomon had, which is like, man, at some point you're going to realize like, God, this is not doing for me what I thought it was going to do.
Uh-huh.
Like, I got the stuff or I didn't get the stuff, whatever. That's the great argument about that. It's like one of those things is always what gets you there. Either
that's
getting
true.
All the stuff.
That's true.
And then you sort of, at the top of the mountain, you're like, oh, God, like, this isn't, I thought
it's
I was
a terrifying place to be where you've checked all the boxes and your whole life has all this like potential energy.
Yes.
And then all the boxes are checked and then you're like,
yeah,
well, what now?
Yeah. Well, and that's where I think
feel the same.
It's going to feel the same. Yeah. And then it's, boy, talk about futility. But I think that's where, you know, Solomon and David Brooks and these guys really lean into. And in halftime, he talks about this. Like, then benevolence is such a big deal because we really find so much joy and, you know, contentment
service.
And yes, and service and going like, man, if it's not about me, then it must be about something else. And then it's like, wow, this actually really gives me fulfillment. Not pursuing all these things.
And Jesus is just like, just holding his temple like,
oh my gosh, guys.
It's kind of what I was saying.
Dude, do you guys remember? I was down there for 33 years. Sermon on the Mount was a masterpiece.
I was a senior citizen back then.
They were about to put me out to pasture, literally, because I had worked that pasture so long.
Well, it's good that we're talking about midlife and all that, because I realize a lot of, I feel like a lot of my like random thoughts have to do with kind of this, you know,
there's
aging.
Okay.
Right. Now these are, stay with me, because these are as random as they get.
Okay.
Some of these may be passing thoughts where you don't even have a comment.
I thought you were about to say they're passive aggressive, which I'm still here for.
They're all passive aggressive, of course.
That's fair.
Okay. My first thought, this is what kicked me off into making this little Dadville Monthly Thoughts.
Let's do it.
Note.
Yep.
Right. I was running the other day, and you know, I've been running. You and I are the same way. We are runners. We run. You know, we're not like marathoners, but we run, and I've run my whole life. And there was a guy who ran past me, and he's not like blowing past me. Like if he had just like sprinted by me, I could have been like, oh, that guy's probably getting started. Or, oh, he's doing like a sprint day. Like, we're not in competition here.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He went by me at
just enough.
Just enough that like we were kind of together for a little bit, and then he just ran past me. And I thought, like, if I'm running like a, you know, let's say an 8 mile pace, he was running like a 7:30 pace, you know. And I thought, I feel like this is a moment in my life. 2 years ago, I'm not saying I could have caught him, but I'm saying 2 years ago, I would have.
You'd have turned it up.
I would have cranked it up and been like, this means something. I need to.
Yeah.
I would have sized him up. I would have been like, we're about the same weight, about the same height. How old is he? He's probably 5 years younger than me, but that I'm still in the game.
Like, yeah, man.
And that the other day, I was just like,
just let it go.
God bless you, brother. Go. Run.
That was your youth. It was literally your youth in physical form.
Running past me. But I also was like, I'm not giving up. I'm still out here running.
You're out there hustling.
But it was this kind of freeing, like, I'm just going to run my pace.
Yeah, there
and
you
isn't
go.
That... Isn't that what life is?
Yes.
Isn't that what, like, I'm not quite in my 40s yet, but I'm pushing there. And I'm like, that's what I want my 40s to be. I want my 40s to be when I'm like the other day, Amy and I went to a birthday get together for our friend Matt Wirtz. And we were at this place. It was like a hipster. There's so many mustaches and high tops.
Very Wirtzy.
Very Wirtzy. It's a great place. Super fun.
Cool.
Lots of
vibe.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hipstery.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't have any of the social anxiety that I would have had 10 years ago.
Yeah.
None of that.
Yeah.
Like when I was in my 20s, I would have been like, should I run to like a CVS, get a razor and shave into a mustache real quick in the car and then come back in? I'm like, look, I'm not even, these people don't even see me.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I got two kids at home. I'm going to leave here at 8:45.
Yeah, yeah.
And get back to those kids. It's like a very freeing thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
You let that ship sail.
The ship sailed.
I think that's I wonder what that age is for everybody when you finally are like, I just am what I am.
Yeah.
This is just what it is.
Now, here's the other side of this coin.
Oh, boy.
This is another thought.
Okay.
So, speaking of middle of the night. And
will you name your next record that?
Middle of the Night or
Speaking of middle of the Night?
You know, I thought of, side note, of a album name the other day. And instead of for some reason, I was thinking of modern inventions. I thought, what if I wrote an album called Modern Intentions?
Wow.
I don't even know what it would be.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have to have a different, like a double life.
You would. Well, you'd have to have a mustache for sure.
Exactly.
Modern Intentions.
Anyway.
Sounds like a really intense jazz record. Doesn't it?
It sounds like it would be like heavy jazz or like My Morning Jacket.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. So this is something that I think about a lot. Like we were talking about this the other day after the holidays. We were talking, it was you and I and a couple friends of ours, and we were talking about how we sleep really well when we go home to our parents' house.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
For sure. Yep.
Because, and my theory on it was, I think there's something about when I'm at home, there is some part of my brain every single night. Like I've got a, it's not a baseball bat. It's actually Amy's grandfather, who was a policeman. It's his old nightstick.
Oh, wow.
Is sitting by my bed. So if something goes down,
you're right.
I'm going for the nightstick.
Yeah.
So that's a part of my brain that's always firing a little bit. It's like, I'm not paranoid. I don't, you know, but if something should happen, I'm stepping up.
Come on, man.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And that part of my brain shuts off when I'm at my parents' house.
Because your dad's doing it.
Or Amy's parents. It's like, I'm not the guy in charge here.
Yeah.
I'm going to bed. I'm sleeping.
You're not
like
the chief,
baby.
Man. You got another chief.
Yes.
You just, yeah.
So that's a part of my life. Right. So the other day, I'm in the kitchen. I'm making soup for lunch. Just me. I'm just at home by myself. I'm making soup. And, you know, something else that I'll add to it is, you know, there are some, I've never been in a real fight in my life.
Mm.
But there's a part of me, you know, that like, that part of my brain that's humming when I'm going to sleep and like it's the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Is still sort of firing every now and then in public.
Yeah.
Right? You see somebody walk into
a
store and you're like, if that guy started making trouble, could I?
Making trouble. God, you're old.
You talk about getting old.
God, your youth just left and now you have like elderly man jumped on your back in that run.
So anyway, all that to say, that's just a part of the brain.
Making trouble.
We'll
if you start
out.
Saying making pictures, would you make a picture for us real quick, son?
If we edited that out and I replaced it with something, what would be the phrase?
Wants to throw hands.
Being a punk.
No, throwing hands.
Is that the thing? I don't know. That doesn't make sense. Anyway, so I'm making soup. I accidentally I put the ladle down a little hard in the soup and it splashes up on my hand. And I jump back. I do the listeners can't see right now, but I do the least aggressive, least manliest, whatever that means. Just like ouch. And in that moment, I'm like, I would be nothing. I can't defend my family.
Yes.
Look what just happened. All those things where like you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
And the guy's getting in a fight, and you're like, yeah, I could do that. I'm like, no, I couldn't.
Not if the guy had hot soup. You are out.
If he has an ounce of hot.
If he starts flicking.
Some broth. Just some hot broth. Will take me down in a second.
I guarantee there's been a guy in a fraternity they called Hot Broth. What's up, Broth? Hey, Broth. Hot Broth, man. Yeah, those for me, I was running right by our houses the other day, and I hit like a step on the sidewalk that like the pavement wasn't equal. And my inability to recover and how much it hurt my toe was the moment I was like, how am I even still alive? How have I made it this far?
It just goes to show you how unrealistic those fights are.
Oh, man.
Because you're like, some guy gets like punched in the face and he's down. And then he gets back up and he's back in it. It's like, that's not real.
Yeah.
I just burnt my hand on a microscopic piece of broth. And I think I'm going to take the rest of the day off.
I can't believe it over 2 weeks.
I better cancel a show or two just for the sake of the rest of my
career. Do you think there's something you could market where it was a TV show where dads fought? Just like normal dads. I don't need anybody that's ever had any kind of training.
Yes.
But just
we split screen it with like Street Fighter. Just to show people,
just
like,
to see what dads could do, just out there, like,
and what they can't do.
Well, and the thing is, I guarantee you, most of the hurts would come non-fight,
self-inflicted.
Like, turned too quick. Oh, my ankle! He's down. Or just got one guy gets so winded in the first like 30 seconds, he's like,
just like during his warm up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
shadow boxing, and then he has to cancel.
He pulls his arm. He's like, son of a. He has to call it non-contact injury. That's what it would be.
Oh man. Okay. Next thing. Next thought. Now this is maybe the other side of the coin, what we're talking about. What do you have irrational confidence in?
You sent me this text, and this is a wonderful question.
I feel like I'm pretty sure everyone has it. Everyone has at least one category in their life that they have an irrational confidence in. Now we could have a whole other discussion about irrational fears.
Oh,
but
God.
What is something that you have irrational confidence in?
Can you go first so I can think about it?
There might be more than one.
This is such a great question, by the way. Everybody listening, I would give $100 to hear everybody's answers to
this. I know.
This.
I want to. We should. Everybody, like, DM us with your irrational.
Yeah, irrational.
Confidence.
Yeah.
Mine used to be defending my family until the soup incident.
The soup incident of 2022.
It's just, I see the whole world differently now.
There's nothing, I just have to comment. There's nothing like the sadness that accompanies those revelations.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, you watch one MMA fight and you're like, there's no way I could take, like, that guy, look at him, he's a shrimp. And then, like, you're wrestling with your kid and they knee you in the side and, like, you kind of start crying. And then, like, your six-year-old kid's like,
he
you okay?
Just catch
like,
you yeah, off sorry. A little bit.
Gosh, you hit me right in the right, and you can't get your, and you're like, that's a six-year-old boy. Like,
or it hits your funny bone. And
oh,
like,
God.
Just give me 90 seconds, and then I will be back in this.
Daddy needs to go outside by himself for a second.
My pinky is throbbing right now.
It hurts so bad.
I've got a friend, a mutual friend, this guy, Buddy, who is 6'4".
He's a monster.
250, I don't know. And again, like, this is just me coping with all the movies I saw as a kid.
Yeah.
Where, like, oh, size is that guy's huge, but, you know, Stallone still takes him down.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, you know, we'll be hanging out or whatever, and he will just, like, he'll bump into me or something. And just that's like a soup moment where I'm like, I was just hit by a freight train.
Yeah, and he was just standing up.
Yes. Anyway, my irrational confidence, probably my number one category, is health. Like, I have my immune system. Yeah. I don't know where it comes from. I have total confidence in, like, whatever happens, like, whatever ailments. I'm like, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, the other day, I had this weird kind of, like, what would you call it? Like a tremor kind of thing. Like it felt like a muscle spasm, but it didn't feel like it was happening on my muscle, on my right side, like where my lat is. It was happening all day. I've never felt this before in my life. It's not like a muscle spasm thing. But I was just like, that's annoying. I hope it goes away.
Meanwhile, your body's like, John!
I mean, there are some people that would be straight to MRI land with that, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm just like,
yeah.
I just don't believe anything is wrong.
Yeah.
When it comes to my health.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's all going
to
be fine.
I used to be like that. I mean, I'm still mostly like that. Like, I don't worry about that kind of stuff, but I'm just like, God, I don't know. I feel like now I'm like, to your point, like I'll be running and I stub my toe and I really think I broke it. Like, I'm not kidding.
Yep.
I'm like, I think I genuinely broke my big toe.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that I can think of on like sitting here is like when you give me a microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well, I would argue that's not irrational.
No, but no, it is. I mean, like right now.
Because that's your thing.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, or I should say maybe like get me in front of people. And I'm just like, oh, I'll figure it out. But that is not true.
Yeah.
Like I've failed. Like I MC our young adults class at our church, right? Like me and my wife helped me lead the class. And so I'm always the guy that welcomes everybody. And I'm always like, let's just go. And I'll get 2 minutes in. And I'm like, One, this isn't funny. Two, nobody thinks this is funny. Three, you can't pull out of this crash. Like, because I'll just try to, and everybody's kind of like, what? And I'm like, so, you know, what? And I'm like, what? So welcome to class. And I just am reminded, like, what is this thing in me that thinks, like, yeah, just let me, I'll get up there. We'll figure it
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Because, sure, maybe, like, majority of the time it works, but there's that other 30%. That's yeah. rough.
Yeah.
But even then, I kind of walk off like, nah, it just didn't go well.
I mean, the analogy that comes to my mind, though, is Jordan with the ball.
Yeah.
It's like, look, how many times? He's not saying he's never missed a shot. He still just wants the ball, though. He's missed a ton of shots. Babe Ruth struck out most of the time.
Just give me the mic. Just give it. Well, I'll figure it out. Look, okay? I'll figure it out. Just give me the mic.
That's, I'm not saying it will go well. I'm saying I think it will go well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, God, that is a funny question. I'm like, that is the first thing that comes to mind. No, it's just like, I don't know. It's something about when you just get people and you need somebody to say something.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm sure it'll work out.
And it's like, again, like, I don't know where my irrational confidence in my immune system and health comes from. I really don't. Maybe it's because I haven't ever had like a real
yeah.
health scare.
Yeah,
maybe.
Right, right.
But where does yours come from? Like, did you always have that? Or was that, did something happen like when you were, you know, a kid, you're in first grade and you say something funny and the class laughs and then it just snowballs from there?
You know what I think? You know what I think it is? I think it's just this really irrational confidence. It's like there's that's why it's definitely funny, is there's not really any pedigree for it. It's just
right.
It's just this belief that like it's gonna be fine. When like you have no real great track record for showing that it's gonna be fine. Which is so funny to me because it just shows how unattached you are to reality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I do think, like, I don't know. I think realizing that even when it goes bad, it's not as bad as you think it is. I think that
right.
for me is, like, kind of the buoying is, like, uh-huh. the thing that sort of keeps that a thing for me is, like, even when you crash, being able to crash and say you've crashed on stage is still funny.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. like, there's not, you know, your ripcord still gets you out of trouble. So it's, like,
right.
so there's a little bit of, like, even at its worst... I'll never forget that, like, playing shows, like, how when I would say that wasn't funny, people laughed really hard. And I was like, well, if that's all you got to do,
yeah,
how, I mean, yeah. you can land that plane every time.
Yeah.
Which is not true, because I've definitely been in a lot of scenarios where I've tried to be funny or just, like, try to be comfortable, and it is not working.
Right.
And I'm even doing the, what, that wasn't funny. Everybody's going, sure.
Yeah,
and I'm
we
like,
know.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why we're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Dave. Dave? Dave. Oh, okay. Hey, guys. Sorry, it's just me here. I was just going to talk to Dave about something. I was just going to ask him if he ever finds himself stressed out about how difficult meal prep, you know, can be. You know, and that was going to be one of those things where, like, I ask him the question, even though I know his answer is yes, John, meal prepping is totally stressful and difficult. And then I would be like, well, listen, ButcherBox makes it so easy and simple to find high quality meat through their personal subscription service. And he would probably cut me off because he'd be like, John, I know, I already use ButcherBox. I love it, you know? And I would be like, well, listen, I love it too. My own family has loved using it. And even our kids love the meat we use for the meals. And he'd probably be like, you know, John, every month ButcherBox ships a curated selection of high-quality meat right to your home and offers free shipping within the U.S. And I'd be like, Dave, that's one of my favorite things about ButcherBox, but I also love that they give you the option to customize your own box so that you're getting exactly what you want. Now, it sounds too good to be true, guys, but it's not. This is your chance to never have to shop for ground beef again. That's right. ButcherBox is giving new members free ground beef for life. Plus, you get a $10 off coupon. Sign up at butcherbox.com/dadville and get 2 pounds of ground beef in every order for the life of your subscription, plus a $10 off coupon. Let's go over this one more time because I want you guys to get this. Log on to butcherbox.com/dadville to claim this deal. And then Dave would probably be like, John, you want to go get some ground beef? And I'd be like, only if it's Butcher Box. And then we'd laugh and hug. Okay, back to the show.
2 thoughts on that. One is, it's all about confidence. When it comes to being on stage, it's like, it's one thing, there's a conversation to be had before you make the decision to get on stage with a microphone.
Yeah.
But once you're on stage, that conversation is moved.
Yeah, it's gone.
At that point, it's like, it doesn't matter. You have to project comfort and confidence. Otherwise, if you're uncomfortable, then maybe there's like, Andy Kaufman is the only guy that has turned that into a thing.
Yeah.
The guy who's like super uncomfortable.
But he was
on stage.
So confident in his uncomfort. Exactly. So even that's cheating.
Even that's cheating. Yes.
But everybody listening has been to a show, musical show, where you could tell the performer was not comfortable. And
it makes you uncomfortable.
Oh, you'll get in your car and you just feel like your body is just like seized up.
Yeah.
And they can be incredibly talented.
Right.
Like they could have sung their face off. But right. You just kind of leave those things going like, gah, you like shake it out.
I hope
they're
okay.
Is everything, has he worked through his thing? Or?
But also my other thought was, and again, I don't mean to like just beat this drum to death, but it's like that we talked a little bit, I think on maybe the Thanksgiving episode, where I talked about my evolution of like comfort on stage. And again, this is something that like, this is something I want from my 40s. Like, I want that feeling of ease with myself, that comfortability in my own skin that I feel at, like, the hipster place.
Yeah.
That's starting to kind of seep into everyday life and just being on stage and just being like, look, this is going to go how it's going to go.
Yeah.
I don't need this to go a certain way.
Yeah.
You know?
God, that I'm going to think about. We may need to revisit that in a few months because I want to do like a much deeper dive because I'm sure there's some ridiculous ones that I have that make zero sense.
Well, and again, I take issue with your answer because I think it's not irrational. It's just like it's like Jordan. It's like I have an irrational confidence in basketball. It's like, well, you're like the greatest player that ever played.
Yeah, you can't. What do you mean you have?
It's not irrational.
Yeah, you got all the data there, man.
Right. That's just an informed decision.
Yeah, there's nothing irrational about that.
Okay, so my next thought was, this is kind of an ethical dilemma that has come up.
Okay.
This came up because the other day, Luca was sick, right? So she stayed home from school.
Okay.
And it was very sweet, little Sammy Barnes. Ran across the street and brought a little gift.
Loaf of bread.
He made a little card. Oh, my gosh. Listeners, I can't portray accurately how cute this card was. Little Sammy. It was like soccer was involved.
Oh, that was
But
hysterical.
Space. It was a get well soon card with Sammy playing soccer with Luca and Livy. But then also the second half of the page was just outer space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a logical jump.
It's fine. They both exist.
Yes.
Why not put them together on a card?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, I love that he labeled them both. At the bottom, he had soccer with an arrow to soccer and space to an arrow to space.
Yes.
Anyway, he brought over this this bag of like these muffins. Now, Livy's at school. Luca's sick, legitimately sick. Like she had a 24-hour bug. She's laid out on the couch. She's not eating anything. She's miserable. I'm stuck with this kind of ethical dilemma here. There are four muffins. There are four members of our household. I eat my muffin. It's so good. This muffin is so good. I eat it without a coffee. And as I'm taking that last bite of this muffin, I think this muffin would be really good with a coffee. I could make a little espresso right now and have another muffin. So I do it. Here's the sad thing.
I have to know something. Does anybody other than you know how many came?
No.
See,
that plays into it.
This is a big...
That plays into it. Yeah, yeah. So I make a little espresso. I eat a second muffin. And I'm sad to say, this is the most shameful part. This is where the ethical dilemma comes in.
Yeah,
I wasn't even thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I'm like,
These are technically for Luca. They were dropped off for Luca.
Yeah, she can't eat.
It's for the table, but it's...
She's sick.
She kind of... Yeah, it's for her. The ethical dilemma is how many of these do I eat? Now, there were other things involved. There were other things brought in. There were like some cookies and stuff. Yeah, so yeah. I'm not taking everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. But what I thought was interesting is like when it comes to my kids and their food, it's the one area of life where I behave differently, where I'm like, if these were brought over for someone else, if this was even for Amy, I wouldn't even be thinking, I'm like, these are Amy's.
Yeah.
I'll ask her if I can have one. But I would never come over to your house and just start eating, you know, like gift wrapped food, you know. But if my kids, there's this weird kind of like, well, I'll decide what they get.
Yes.
She doesn't need to have four muffins. Maybe she doesn't need to know that these muffins came. And then you're like, yeah, she probably wouldn't even like these.
No.
Yeah.
Well, there's a parent tax too. If you bring it here.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's
which is not, that's a mentality that I do not place on any other area of life.
Yeah.
I'm not like, hey, I deserve to take a, you got to pay the toll.
Yeah.
That's not how I, you know.
But the deep, some maybe a little of the deeper dive I think that listeners deserve to hear on this subject is one of my favorite things in the whole world, which is the John McLaughlin method of eating something he feels guilty about. This is literally something that brings me as much joy as about anything does because two things are happening at the same time, which is where I get so much joy.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
A lot happening, but I would say the two primary things are a real sense of I shouldn't do this, a very substantial,
a painful amount of awareness.
Yes, acute awareness.
Yeah.
And I would say maybe this is paramount for those who are curious and want to bring John these, which I beg you to bring these to him at shows because then I get to see this happen in real time. What are they called? Krugers? Krullers.
They should be called Krugers.
Krugers for what they did to your stomach. Krullers.
Kringles.
Kringles. Okay. Yep. I knew it was some German, Danish sounding thing. So Kringles. Everybody knows these. It's for me. Now, this is the grace God gave me, John. Mm. For me growing up, I just didn't even want to try them. Thank God I didn't because I would have eaten them.
That.
I know. And listen, I admit that now.
Yeah.
But they were the thing. They were like the candy corn at Halloween to me for Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
Like mom always had one or grandma. And I was always like, oh, I don't want that. I don't know why. I just was like, I'm not even going to try it.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a non-factor. It was just like, let's get rid of that thing or give it to, you know, whatever. Whoever relative would take them home. This is your Achilles heel, these things.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and what happens every year with you, which brings me so much joy, is this two-part thing, which is you will be given one, and you have a very real sense of, this is so many calories. Why would anybody eat this? This is terrible for me. I'm in good shape. I'm not trying to get into bad shape.
Right.
Right?
Well, as soon as, you guys have brought one over before, and it's gotten to the point where I think it's like, there's some malice involved. Listen, you bring it over.
If I'm in a bad place, it's a quick way for a little dopamine hit. It's just a quick little dope. I feel so much better. But
as soon as I see it, I'm just like, oh, no.
So the part two is, one, the acknowledgement of like, exactly, like, this is I shouldn't eat this. Why would I? But two, the other side of the war.
Yeah.
I am going to eat this.
I know
all
I'm going to eat it.
All of it.
Well, I have a decision right up front.
Yeah.
I either take this from Annie Barnes' hands and say, thank you so much.
Yep.
And as soon as she leaves, I throw it in the trash and I pour gasoline over it.
Yeah. Stick it in the food processor. Or the
Not even that. I'd figure out a way to get it back.
It's just milkshake at that point.
It needs to be some kind of a toxic chemical needs to be involved that's going to eat at it. Or if I don't do that, if I go the route of like, well, let's have a sensible slice.
Yes.
Then it's like, ship has sailed.
And here's what it brings me so much joy, everybody, is that either Amy or you, from that point on, knows what the job is. And that is to send us every couple of hours pictures of said food and how much has been eaten over time. Because it's that thing that my dad does, and I do now, where it's like, I'm just taking... Look how small the sliver
That's
is.
That's the thing. You have the sensible piece, and you walk away for a while, and you try to act like you're not thinking about that Kringle. And I come back, and I take out, I just take a slip, like a
It's not even as wide as a finger.
No.
It's literally just like
it's not even as wide as the knife that I'm cutting to get it.
That's exactly right.
And then I do that until it's gone. Will it take me a week? Who knows? I can't predict the future.
But the other thing that makes me laugh so hard about it is once you've started, there's no thought to throwing it away at that point. It's like you said, you either throw it away when you get it or you're eating the whole thing. Like,
because the taste is in your mouth. Your whole brain is hijacked by sugar.
Oh, my gosh. This would be an interesting thing to ask the listeners. So for me, those things, if I go anywhere, this would be what I want to know from y'all that are listening. What are the foods that if you walk in and you see them, it doesn't matter if you just ate like a king's feast, you're going to eat that food.
You'll make room.
The two easiest ones for me, like right off the top of the dome, go.
Chick-fil-A nuggets.
Done?
Yep.
Done. What's the other one? I bet you probably could guess the second one.
Chick-fil-A nuggets is one. Number two is, Chicago pizza.
Jets pizza specifically.
Oh, Jets pizza.
Pizza of any kind is tough for me to, like, and this is, and so watch me tie this into Dadville. This is where you get killed as a parent, because what are the two things that everybody, especially in the South, is going to have at their child's birthday party?
Chick-fil-A and pizza. Yeah.
So I have to make a decision like you do. It's exactly the same thing. Annie will go, hey, take, you know, Sam over to Charlotte's birthday, whatever. It's at 4:00. And I'm like, that's dangerous, man. That's going to be food. So then I have to go either I need to eat now and get full, or just give myself to the night. And it is, I don't know. I just can't. And again, it's not any pizza. It's Papa John's. Like, I may have a slice, but I'm not going to be over there. Like, if it's Jets pizza, I physically can't be around it without just needing to eat it.
Yeah.
When I played a show years ago at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, and you know all the Christian colleges got the Chick-fil-A hookup, which is always dangerous.
Right.
So I'm playing there. Seth Philpott, one of my best friends, one of our dearest friends, mutually, he's road managing me, and we walk in, and there is a Chick-fil-A. It's like they had emptied the restaurant in our dressing room. Yeah. That's literally what it felt like. Like every iteration of the menu was there.
Which we could stop right there, and just look at that scenario there. Like, is that exclusively an American scenario there? I feel like there are countries over in, like, you know, Europe that would be like, why
of this food? Why do you have this
food? Why so much? That, let's just do the math here.
Yeah. I think it's because we feel like it's like we're taking care of you. Like, there's nothing you need.
Yeah.
Like, you can just eat and be and die in this room. So I remember, this is a true story. I grabbed Seth and I saw it. I saw that they had the 5,000 chicken nugget tray.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to do was fold 15. It into a taco and just like tree chip it. Just like lean it up and just not breathe for about 5 minutes. And I grabbed Seth and I said, hey, man, I need you to do me a favor. He's like, yeah. I said, let me go twice. Like, let me take my plate over to the chicken nuggets and fill it up and do it twice, which is already two times too many.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be about 30 nuggets, maybe 40. Yeah. I don't know. The third time physically stopped me. And he was like, dude, that's hysterical. I was like, look at me. I need you to do this for me, for my family. And he was like, okay. You know, we kind of laughed off first time I go. He's like, second time, he's like, hey, that's two. And I was like, yeah. I get up for the third one. And he kind of awkwardly walks up. He's like, hey. He didn't. And I'm like, dude, it's not a big
things
deal.
Have
he's like, well, you kind of, it's like, Seth, dude, chill out. It's just three. He's like, I really feel like you probably shouldn't. And I got kind of mad. And then in that moment, I snapped. I was like, dude, thank you so much. I'm so sorry. Like, it is genuinely a problem for me.
Yeah. I get that. Ugh.
And two, the problem with chicken nuggets is they're just so edible. Like, they're just little.
They don't count.
No. Ugh.
That would be me. I mean, I would feel that with the chicken nuggets, but, like, you know, donut holes.
Yeah.
Oof. Or candy corn. I mean, I've had to throw away bags and bags
of candy corn.
Those candy pumpkins too, which are like the mountaintop for me.
Yeah.
Okay, so next question is, what are you perhaps irrationally... Now, I don't mean big things. I don't mean like... The question is, what are you scared of? I don't mean like big, heavy things.
Okay.
Like bowling balls or things like that. Or death. I mean, what are the things that you are...
Irrationally like, scared of.
My thing is, if we had like a snake in our house or something like that, I mean, I don't want that.
I know where you're going.
But you know, or a mouse. Amy, I think Amy's in this category would be mice. She hates mice. I'm like, I want the mouse out of our house, but I'm not scared of it. It's fine. Yeah. I would pick it up with my hand if I could catch it. If there is a... I don't even want to say the word.
Just do it.
If there is a cockroach in our house, Dave, I hate cockroaches so much. And we, at our last house, we had a cockroach problem.
Yeah.
Like, which we eventually figured it out. Long story short, it was a leaky shower head. And that's how they were like, there's always a source of water. Anyway, but there was cockroaches all the time. And the worst case would be like when company's over or like we get home from a date and the babysitter's still there and the babysitter's like, hey, welcome home. There is a cockroach in the... And I don't hear anything that she says after that. I'm just like, no, because I gotta go get the cockroach. And I'm the most scared of this cockroach in the house.
Yeah.
So it's become a joke now, like if there's a cockroach, which there never is because we have a company that comes and like sprays the house and the basement. There's never a cockroach, but should there be one, the girls now know that it's like a thing. They're like, "Daddy, do you want me to get it?" I'm like, "No, I'll get it."
Daddy, are you crying?
Of course I'm crying.
I just got some soup on my hand. I think for me this is ridiculous. It's sharks, but not in the ocean.
Okay, it wasn't ridiculous until you added the not in the ocean part.
I can be swimming. This is true. Look, I'm just going to say this. If I'm at someone's house and I'm in their pool alone for too long, and if it's night, I'm a 43-year-old man.
Uh-huh.
There's no way a shark can be in that pool. There's no scenario that you could be like, well, if the thing and it's right, it could. Yeah. There's no way.
It's not like you have some weird... thing where you think sharks could come through a filtration system.
This is sort of like it would be like I don't know. I will swim, and in my brain, I'm like, I don't know though. Just don't look back. Don't look back.
What was that?
Yeah. And I will, you'll watch me. You can look out the window, and I will jump out of the pool like an NBA, like the dunk contest, just like shoot out of a pool. I can't do it. I just can't be in water very long before I start to get in my head.
Yeah.
So a couple years ago, I was staying with my buddy Jordan at his place down in Florida for this riding trip. One of my favorite things in the world. Like, it is the weirdest guilty pleasure. It's not a guilty pleasure. It's just something I really love.
Yeah.
I love going on runs and then getting in the pool.
Oh,
like,
that is,
I want a pool just for that reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to have it with the kids, whatever. I love going for a run and then jumping in a pool. It's like literally one of my favorite things to do. So we're staying at his place. There's a big pool across 30A down there in Florida. And nobody's in. It's really early in the morning. It's 9 a.m. Sharks aren't even awake then. I think they sleep until noon.
Of course, yeah.
But it's a huge pool. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to get in this pool. And I dive in. And the minute I come up, I'm like, Dave, that's ridiculous. You don't need to look behind you. But I, as a grown man, as a fully realized grown man.
Is there something about you being alone in the pool?
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah, other people in there, they've got choices. So he could take that guy out, and by the time I'm out of the pool.
Right.
It's just this really irrational thing. Like, you just don't know.
The shark represents loneliness for you. I think that's it. Can it all be traced back to Jaws? I mean,
oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And in my obsession with watching any movie trailer that's about scary shark movies.
Yeah.
Like, I need to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is in me. I have to, like, acknowledge.
It's a safe way for you to confront your fear.
Yes. Yeah. I had a friend, Jared Grigger, one of my dear friends who's one of the funniest people I know in the world. He went to South Africa and did that, like, I'll never forget. He texted me. He's like, dude, we were texting about something. He's like,
last life from South Africa. It was really fun. What'd y'all do? Because I've been. I was like, what'd y'all do? He's like, oh, dude, we did like, went down in a cage with the great whites right off of Seal mm-hmm. Island or whatever. And I was like, in the way they do that one, this is even scary. Well, it's not even scary because it's all terrifying. But these are the mamas. Yeah. These are like those like, you know, 15 footers. And I think they chum too because it's like legal there or something. So, I mean, it's like they're there and they are heavily represented. He said you got in your wetsuit and they keep the cage open at sea level. So, like, you jump in and out just right onto the boat. So I mean, either one is terrifying. Like, you sink the thing and you're in it. That's just – but, like, knowing these things, you're just kind of right in there and the top is open because it's, like, a little above water and they're kind of –
But that's what you need to do. That's your only way out of this.
I have to really square up with this.
You got to confront it.
Jeez. They'd be like, why is there so much urine? And do you smell the urine in the ocean?
I mean, that has got to happen all the time. Urine in the water. But everybody's got to pee out of fear.
Oh, just sheer terror.
That reminds me of the time when we were interviewing John Foreman. Do you remember that story he told where they saw the great white?
Yes.
And then they went surfing?
No. Craziest story. I'm not going to tell it because it takes so long. Craziest story. I really mean this. I'm going to cement this as truth. This craziest story I've ever heard in my life. This is the truth. Look it up. I'm not going to tell the story. It takes so long. A story about a New Zealand dad and his daughter and like one or two of their friends who was swimming in New Zealand off the coast, like, you know, in a little cove. So it's like a, you know, you can come in and out of it, but it's like its own little ocean area. And basically, how do you tell the story? But basically, just look it up. They were surrounded by these dolphins.
Oh, yeah.
And then they found out the reason was is there was like four or five great whites 30 feet down and the dolphins wouldn't let... Just read that story. And the weirdest part of it is, to your point, at the end of it, the dad was like... I mean, they're like... I mean, I think it's 100 yards out from the coast. And he was a lifeguard there. But he's like, after the boat came and got the girls, I just swam back because I was like, no, you're not taking this from me. I'm like, bro, I don't have words for that.
And how different would that story be if it ended with, and he got eaten by a great white?
I mean, it's like Jesus, why, like, why, bro, you? I sent dolphins, man. One of them spoke English to you.
I thought it was done, so I walked away. Then I got an update from the Holy Spirit that you're gone.
John got burnt, and we all ran over to this. It was just soup, but we saw his heart level spike.
We took our eye off the ball, and the broth got too hot. Now John's spiraling.
And we lose the dad to the shark, which we thought for sure he got the memo. We had three Christian dolphins. It was literally Peter, Paul, and Mary. There were three Christian dolphins that were down there.
Christian dolphins. That's the name of this episode. Oh, man. Just strong in their faith. Strong swimmers, even stronger in their faith.
They could walk on water. That's what you don't know about Christian dolphins. They can pop up and just shoot across the top of the water.
You know, we all want to be healthier versions of ourselves, right? Right. That's why Athletic Greens has partnered with us to give our listeners the opportunity to ensure we are getting our greens in. Listen, I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to find an easy way to incorporate crucial vitamins and crucial minerals into my daily routine, which was so hard to do until Athletic Greens AG1 came along. Listen, AG1 is a small micro habit with big benefits. And it's one thing you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. I love how easy it is, and it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements that you would need for yourself. To make it even easier, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/dadville. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/dadville to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Oh, man. Okay. My other thought was, I feel like this is one of those tiny little like mundane things that happens in life that I think separates people. Like, you know what I mean? Like when the low fuel light comes on in a car, there are two different kinds of people, right?
And I'm curious.
Oh, like
I don't know
how they deal with it.
Yeah, I don't know how you deal with it. Because I deal with it the same way every time. And my car, even like the low fuel light comes on, and I like my screen comes up and it says, "You're low on fuel. Do you want directions to the nearest gas station?" And all I have to do is just click yes, and it will tell me where the nearest gas station is. I've never clicked yes. I always click no, and I always just keep going.
Yeah, you do.
And I always take it to the point where I'm like uncomfortable. I'm anxious.
Yeah,
I'm I could run out of fuel at any moment now.
Yeah.
And all the while I'm thinking, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
I just passed 5 gas stations.
Have you ever run out of gas?
One time.
Yeah. That's an interesting feeling, that whole experience.
Yeah. You feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
Because you're like,
this was so
avoidable.
That's the
first thing they put on cars was your fuel level.
Like, before the wheels or anything.
They didn't even have all the technology for the wheels yet, but they were like, well, we at least need to know. Let's let them know.
Assuming we figure out how this thing is going to move. They should know how much they have to go.
So that they could know, give them a light before they run out, so they have plenty of time.
I borrowed a truck from Wirtz once, and he had an old truck that I moved something with, and he warned me. He's like, hey, this gas, you cannot trust the gas thing. So whatever it says, he's like, I think this is how much in it. And I pulled onto the interstate, and within like not even half a mile, it was like, and I pulled off, and it was like, well, here we go.
You were warned.
Yeah.
So I used to have a Harley Davidson motorcycle, and it would give you a low fuel light, and then if you ignored that,
we gave you a second one.
There's a second tank, so this is probably true on maybe all cars or all motorcycles, or at least all Harleys. You can run out of gas, and you feel it running out of gas, and then you reach down, like right here, like right underneath you. There's this little switch. You just like turn it, and then you're on the reserve tank. And I would do that every time, and then I'd go on the reserve tank. And the reserve tank is like, you don't know how long you have. There's no gauge for the reserve tank.
That's even more anxiety.
I know. Why do I do it? It's the same part. This is my theory. I think whatever you do when the low fuel light comes on in your car, it determines. If I could see someone's behavior there, I can determine, I can guess how quickly they get to the airport before their flights.
That
I think it's the same
genius.
It's the same group of people.
Genius thing.
I will leave my house. This happened the other day. I can't remember if I've said it on here, because I probably did, because I was so proud of it. But my in-laws think this is insane. Like
I think this is insane.
You think this is insane? You if you have a flight that leaves at 10:30, I don't know what time you would get to the airport. But I had a flight that left. I think it was 10:35. I left my house at 10 o'clock or 10:05 or whatever, and I texted my in-laws. And I was like, hey, I have a flight. It leaves in 31 minutes, and I just got in the Uber.
John, I don't want to hear this story.
But here's the thing. I need to go back. I wish I would have gone back and checked this, because I know the text. I can see when I sent it. At 10:16, I'm pretty sure these numbers are right. 10:16, I was in my seat.
That I don't believe. In Nashville?
Yes.
How?
It takes 11 minutes to get to the airport.
Okay.
I've got clear and TSA pre, just all the things. You go straight through. My gate happened to be just right there. I walked right on the plane.
And I felt
right
like
down.
A champ.
I won. And here's the thing. No one cares. No one cares.
Yeah, your in-laws do.
And my body is like, way to go, John. We're super stressed now. Our cortisol levels are through the roof, okay? We're firing
on
all cylinders.
That's why you're in such good shape. Because your body's just tense all the time.
And I am. I'm anxious. Like, in the Uber, I could have just left 30 minutes before.
Yeah.
Leave at an hour before your flight. That's already dicey, a lot of people would say. But I would have been relaxed. And
I'll meet you with another theory. I think once you have one successful one of those,
it's like golf.
You start to like, you're like, oh boy, now I know something I probably shouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Because I had a flight. I remember telling you, I played the show in Oklahoma last fall. And I, like an idiot, just was an hour off on all of my estimations.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the guy picked me up. I'll never forget, the sweet guy out in Oklahoma played this event. And he was like, all right, I'll get you in the morning. He was like, what time's your flight? I was like, 10:30. He said, great. So then, like, fast forward 5 minutes later in the conversation, I had just thought it was at 11:30. Uh-huh. So he's like, what time do you want me to get you? I was like, why don't you grab me at 10? And he was like, you're sure? He didn't say your flight's at 10:30. He just said, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, we'll be fine. He was like, for real? And I was like, yeah. He picks me up that morning. By the grace of God, he came at 10:45 because he's a genius. And I was down there that early because I'd just gotten early. So I was in the...
You mean 9:45?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
See, you're already...
See, I'm doing
you're
it.
Back in the...
And so I get in the car, and I'll never forget. We're like 5 minutes into the drive, and I'm like, let me see what time... Oh, my gosh. And he's like, what? I was like, my flight's at 10:30. And it was at like, this is 9:55, and we still got 10 minutes. Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, I kind of wondered why you wanted to leave so late. And I was like, I have no clue why I wanted to leave so late. Now, granted, by the grace of God, I didn't have to check anything. Uh-huh. Like, I was already A.
Yeah.
So, I don't have clear, but I have TSA pre. But I got to the airport, and I was having a mild panic attack.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to miss this flight. Well, here's a funny thing. Now, I did have to, I think I had to run. They had held the door for me. Uh-huh. But I made the flight. And you get a little taste of that.
See?
And you start going like, why do I feel like I need to be here so early?
Well, the thing that I have done, I've only missed one flight because of, like a scenario like you're saying. Well, it was different in that I knew what I was doing. It was a super early flight. That's my only defense. It's like, you're not thinking clearly that early in the morning.
You're never thinking clearly about
this
stuff.
Well, I had played a show the night before. I had a driver that was going to pick me up the next morning, and he said, I'll pick you up at 5. And I was like, yeah, well, let's do 5:15. So we did 5:15, and I missed my flight. Now, here's the thing. I got 15 minutes of sleep? Why did I do that?
It's you pushing back against life is what it is. It's just feeling like I got a little
it's
bit of
control. It's me saying I'm in control.
I have got this.
I will miss the flight.
That's the thing. Like, when I will sit long enough to be like, Dave, an hour is the big difference in 15 minutes. Like,
yeah.
15 minutes, bro. Like, you're going to.
What was the point?
Why do you
think? And now your whole day is gone. You're going to spend it in this airport. I ended up like taking a shuttle to a different airport.
Oh, God.
This is in D.C. Like, that's your whole day.
Yeah, you lost.
Yeah, you lost.
For 15 minutes.
But you were in control the whole time.
And knowing me, the way my brain works is I still woke up anxious. So I didn't even get that.
You don't even
minutes.
Sleep very well.
No.
If I have that early of a flight, I will not sleep well.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that I was going to back to your original thing. I have had a couple times. In fact, me and Matt Mangano, my bass player forever, and Annie, I remember we were somewhere playing a show, and we pulled into a gas station, and I took a picture of it because it said we had 1 mile left on our. But that was like something we couldn't control, where it was like we had left, and just the way the directions went, there were just no gas stations.
Yeah,
and I remember we were like, the car got real quiet, and like we pulled in. I remember literally Mango took a picture of the screen. Like, it was like, I think it may have even said zero.
Uh-huh.
And that feeling was the same as you sitting down on that airplane going like, I got it. But ours was not volitional so much.
Right.
It was kind of like, this is just how life played it. But it was like, that's only happened to me maybe once or twice. It was like, you pulled in and you're watching the gas tank. You're like, oh, I had like half a tank.
Uh-huh.
If that. You know, I had my 10 miles on this thing before it was just going to be toast.
Right. Yeah.
That's how we live though, Johnny.
These little victories.
These little victories.
These little losses. Mm-hmm. So, there you go. Just some random thoughts.
Yeah, we're just catching up.
I think, look, those listening, if you have a good thought, send us a little message.
Yeah.
For the next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just some things to pontificate on.
Yeah.
Right?
And, don't judge us for how we live.
That's something we're going to ask from you forever on this podcast. Just don't judge us. Just be kind. Be kind. We're trying to be kind to ourselves.
Christian Dolphins.
Deadville. Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.